It's amazing how far the dollar goes when you find yourself in Southeast Asia. I rented a place for $400 in Thailand. I used the United Excursionist perk to fly to Singapore. So the United Excursionist perk allows you to fly a one-way segment in the same region before coming back to the US. So that was a 2-hour flight, but I still got to experience Singapore business class on the A350, I believe. So the same jet that I flew later in the year.
Hey there, points people! You just heard a clip from Matt Kartal, who actually writes all of these intros for the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast and prepares the different carousel slides that you see on our Instagram every week. Matt has traveled to 25 countries with many recent long-haul flights in business class. He left his 9-to-5 job in 2022, and points and miles have allowed him to continue to travel. In this episode, expect to hear about Matt's experience flying Singapore Airlines on one of the longest flights in the world, how Matt paid 0 miles for a business class flight by using strategic routing rules, Matt's thoughts on digital nomad life and long-term traveling, and so much more. One way to experience Singapore Airlines business class for fewer points than what Singapore would charge on its own website is by redeeming through Air Canada Aeroplan instead. Aeroplan points are some of the easiest to earn because points can be transferred from several major credit cards. One credit card to consider is the Capital One Venture Card, which earns 2x everywhere. Remember, if you decide to apply for the Capital One Venture or any other card, never ever ever apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have links to the Capital One Venture Card and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipino-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. Hey, Matt, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hey, Julia, excited to talk to you today.
I'm excited to chat with you as well and to hear about some of your amazing trips that you've taken to Asia recently in business class. Before we jump into all of that, tell us about you and your background and how did you get started with points and miles?
I've been traveling since I was 12 years old. That was my first overseas trip with my grandmother to Hungary. After taking that trip, I knew that I wanted to continue traveling. Of course, as a kid, I went where the folks went. But ever since I've graduated high school, I've been traveling and got into points and miles, I think in 2011, and that's my first account with United was opened. And I'm sure around that same time, I signed up for the United credit card. And I remember signing for the first credit card and taking those points and redeeming a business class ticket, I believe, to Europe. And after that, I just kept playing the game and following more and more people and communities to new leveling that up.
When you were first getting started, why did you start with the United card? How did you spread out from there?
Good question. I live in Cincinnati, which is not a United hub, but honestly, my uncle is a big United flyer. So I was connected with him a lot about United and I flew a lot of United. So that's why it's just the airline I happen to be flying a lot with cash. And at the time, I think the redemptions I were getting was like 60,000 points over to Europe business class. I also flew like 60 or 70,000 points to South America in business class. And that was like one credit card signup bonus. I should also add that besides United, my first transferable point card was Chase, the Sapphire Reserve. And I signed up at the time when it was 100,000 point when that card first came out. And I didn't know at the time to be looking at airline alliances. So I thought, oh, all my Chase points go to United. And that's the only way to do things. I've learned a lot since then, of course.
When did you kind of realize, oh, I could be getting these flights for cheaper through Air Canada or something else like that? When was there's more to this game than just United?
Maybe when we connected and when I started really following creators and communities and talking to other points and miles travelers as one. So yeah, it's been very recent. I would say in the last 2-3 years only, which is sad. But you know what? I still enjoyed all the trips that I've taken. So I don't dwell on the past. I just know how to do things better now.
I think that's probably a healthy way to go about it. Some people spend so much time calculating, oh, here's all of the travels I could have gotten if I had just known about this 10 years ago. And like nothing fruitful is going to come out of spending time doing that math. So I would instead encourage people to just say, here's how much travel I can get in the future, and then just kind of go from there. You recently went to Asia in business class, but it's not the first time you went. So let's talk about the first time that you got one of these really cool business class redemptions. How did you do it? What did you fly? How many points did it take? Kind of walk us through all the details.
I believe my first like business class flight was actually to Argentina, Buenos Aires. And I believe it was 60,000 points from, I want to say it was from Houston to Buenos Aires. That was a combination of Chase points, Transfer to United, and probably my United bank. This was before Polaris, so it was just what they call the United Business Cabin. And I actually did that redemption twice. I think once in 2011 and again in 2014. And as far as Asia goes, my first trip to Asia was in 2017 to Thailand. And this redemption was probably doesn't exist anymore because I think it was like I flew Air China from New York to Beijing, also with United. I think it was 80,000 points. And on that trip, I was able to convince two friends to sign up for some credit cards in order to redeem business class with me, which was really cool because they would have never flown like that. And they've never spent the money. So to convince people to sign for a credit card and tell them if you sign for this one credit card, meet the sign up bonus, you have a business class ticket to Asia. So yeah, we flew New York to Beijing and then on down to Thailand. And then my next trips to Asia were the ones that we'll talk about here. And honestly, in 2023, things just aligned. I was pretty flexible with dates because I had left my job and I just found some amazing redemptions, but a lot of it was just kind of luck and date flexibility. So starting out, I needed to get to Bali in June for a group trip. And so what I did was I looked at how do I get across the Pacific Ocean? And I had a large bank of United points sitting because of flights that were canceled during COVID. And so I really, even if there were better redemptions, I wanted to use up my United points. So I was able to find Houston to Taipei on EVA Airways for 88,000 miles, which works with your 10,000 points per hour rule. So I booked that flight from Houston to Taipei, positioned down to Houston. The flight left at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, what am I going to do all day? And will the lounge be open that late? But I went to Houston early in the day, just in case things were to go wrong. But I left the airport for a bit and went and grabbed some food, lunch, worked and things like that. Went back to the airport for check-in, and the lounge was specifically open for our flight that was right across from our gate. So even though the flight left at midnight, there was still a place to relax and hang out before we boarded our flight. So 88,000 points for a flight that would have cost me around $4,000 over to Taipei.
Did you use points for the hotel as well?
I think I did. It was a Hyatt. I may have used points for one night and then cash for the other nights or something like that. I remember using a combination of points and cash for this trip. And then I bought a cash ticket down to Bali on Air Asia. I think it was like a 5-hour flight or something like that. So that was fine for cash. Air Asia is cheap. And so I was in Bali for several weeks. And then I used the United Excursionist perk to fly to Singapore. So the United Excursions perk allows you to fly a one-way segment in the same region before coming back to the U.S. So that was a 2-hour flight, but I still got to experience Singapore business class on the A350, I believe. So the same jet that I flew later in the year.
What was the route that you booked on United Excursionist? Because this is like a next level thing where a lot of people are like, okay, so you flew over to Taiwan, but then like, where are you connecting in order to get the free segment within Asia? Kind of walk us through how you did that route.
So the first segment was from Houston to Taipei. And then I booked Bali economy cash ticket. And so the flight from Bali to Singapore is in the same region. So that made it free. And the way to make it free is you have to have your last segment back into the US. At the time though, I didn't know when I wanted to return home. So I booked what I call a throwaway ticket, which was a simple points ticket within the US just to make that segment free. And as long as I flew the first segment and the Bali to Singapore segment, the last segment I ended up canceling because I didn't need it, but it still made that.
Yeah, that's a good tip for people who are looking at United Excursionist perk. So the rules with this are, let's say you're based in the US. Your first leg has to start in the US. Your last leg has to end in the US. And your free leg, which is going to be the middle one, has to be within a wholly contained region outside of the US. So in this case, it was Bali over to Singapore.
Asia has many segments, I believe, like Southeast Asia, Northeast Asia, Japan. So you have to be within the same segment. You can't go from segment to segment.
Correct. Yeah. One continent doesn't necessarily mean one region. Europe is an entire region on its own in the excursionist map. But yeah, like you mentioned, Asia is a few different regions. But Bali and Singapore are in the same region. So you do have to take that first leg over, which was in United. Then your second leg is free, as long as you book the itinerary correctly. But then that last leg, like you mentioned, is completely optional. And sometimes people will book that last leg, even though they're not going to take it, just because getting that free leg is cheaper than trying to just book everything separately. So that's a little bit of a next level thing with United Excursionist.
And so after spending time in Bali, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, how do I want to get back to the US? I just happened to stumble upon a Sydney to Los Angeles route for 80,000 United miles in Polaris. So again, it was worth flying from Bali down to Sydney. So into Australia was about a 5-hour flight on Air Asia. And then I flew United Polaris from Sydney back to Los Angeles and back to my hometown.
You mentioned that you had time to do this because you had decided to pivot your career and quit your full-time job and then go travel. Can you tell us a little bit about the decision behind that and how you decided, I want to go travel the world for a little bit? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who were like, I want to do that, but I'm a little bit scared. So how did you prepare for that life change?
So first of all, I worked in my corporate job for 21 years. I just burned out of corporate America, was ready for a change. I did take some drastic measures, and I'll say that this may not be something that everybody can do depending on the part of your life that you're in. But yes, I did leave my full-time job, started doing some part-time work for some content creators, also some Uber driving, Lyft driving. But the biggest thing that I did was I sold my condo and I did not buy a new place. That chunk of money went into the bank to help me, you know, furnish this lifestyle for a bit. But points and miles are also a big way of letting me travel. I would not have done all this traveling had I not had the banks of points that I had. It's something that I did kind of out of necessity and also because I wanted to break from corporate life and I wanted to travel more. But yeah, it was the biggest thing, selling my condo, finding some part-time income, and also going to live in places that were cheaper. That's a big factor. It's amazing how far the dollar goes when you find yourself in Southeast Asia. I rented a place for $400 in Thailand, which we'll talk about later, and all my meals were like $2 a piece. So that's a big factor of me traveling is cost of living.
With cost of living and expenses being so much lower now, how are you earning points to perpetuate the travel with points and miles?
Good question. So yeah, when I first started doing this, it was, I have a big expense, sign up for a credit card, get the sign up bonus. Now I am doing some of the other strategies that I know you've talked about in some of your content. Last year I did the LifeLock Rakuten bonus, got 40,000. I just recently did an Amex checking account, business checking account bonus, got 50,000 for there. Last year I had some high expenses on my car, which caused $10,000 in damages that the insurance covered. So I was able to get two new credit cards off of that. And I just did the American Airlines Aviator card, which you can get a sign-up bonus for just buying a pack of gum. And so I did that one the second time around. So some of my cards I've repeated, but yeah, it's strategies beyond sign-up bonuses. Sign-up bonuses just aren't really working for me at the moment.
You mentioned the unfortunate car incident where that got you a couple of sign-up bonuses. Mm-hmm. Since you sold your condo, why do you still have a car? Or do you still have a car? Or you're just like, it's gone. It got wrecked.
No. I have the car, Julie. I really don't like having the car, but it's the Tesla. So I love that car. So when I'm home in Cincinnati, it's the car that I want because I do some Uber driving when I'm here. But I've been thinking a lot about that car, what to do with it.
Do you just park it at your family's place or where do you put it?
Yeah, I'm at my parents' house right now. So I kicked them out to record this podcast.
I love that for you. Yes. So that was all just the first trip to Asia, right? Correct. It was like the excursionist, Australia, all of that. So What was kind of the time frame between when you booked this trip and then the second trip? Did you have to regain all your points because all the points got burned on the first one? Or what's kind of the timeline there?
If I remember correctly, when my car was damaged, I got the sign bonuses and that built me the points up for the second trip. And I'll say that before going to Asia back in June, that's when I found a realtor and I said, I'm going to Asia, find me a buyer for the condo. And he said, well, you need to be back in the US to sign the documents to sell the condo. So literally, I came home in, I think, late July for 3 weeks, just enough time to finish up the sale of the condo, empty the place out, make sure my points were set. And then in the beginning of August is when I flew back to Asia. And if you want, we can talk about that second trip.
Yeah, give us all the details. What did you fly? How many points did that one take? For anybody who wants to recreate this trip, walk us through.
This trip was interesting because I flew to Asia via Air France. So I flew through Europe to get to Asia, which is not something that we commonly do. I was like, how is it going to be flying two long haul flights back to back? But it really wasn't too bad because, again, I was in business class. So I positioned up to Chicago to fly Air France, which was Chicago to Paris, Air France. And then from Paris to Hanoi was on Vietnam Airlines, also both SkyTeam partners. That trip was 55,000 Air France miles. And I transferred those from Capital One or I think American Express, maybe a combination of both. That was my best redemption of the year when it comes to points. Like 55,000 miles to fly that way is just amazing when you consider the number of hours that you're in business class. Air France is a common carrier that I think a lot of people fly, but Vietnam Airlines is not one that we commonly hear about on the internet, but it was a great flight. The one thing that I look for personally in flying solo is the one-to-one configurations in the business class cabin. I really want a seat at the window by myself. So all the flights that I flew last year, I was able to do that. And yeah, I remember the food was decent. The service was great, comfortable. But yeah, I think I had a 4-hour layover in Paris. Easy trip, and it wasn't that bad flying to Asia through Europe. So after getting to Hanoi, I had a really long layover. The layover was so long that I couldn't check in for my next flight to Chiang Mai in Thailand. That flight was a cash flight, but I had to get a Vietnam visa just to hang out in the airport because I had to leave customs and go hang out literally in the front of the airport waiting for my check-in desk to open before I boarded my flight to Chiang Mai, and I couldn't even find a lounge. So I was literally just pacing back and forth in the front of the airport.
I have so many questions. So, how long did you have to pace? What was the visa process? Did you just find this out, like you land in Vietnam and they're like, there's no lounge, you have to go step outside, hang out in the smoker area, walk back and forth over and over again? Did you like land and find this out, or you knew this was
coming? I knew this was coming. I got my visa in advance before flying. Online, I mean, it was super easy. It took, I think, a couple days, pay a small fee. So yeah, I knew I needed a visa, and I knew in doing some research, I'm like, it was separate flights. So you had to check in, and the check-in desk wasn't open. So I had no choice but to leave. And once the check-in desk opened, I was able to then go through security and access the lounge before flying to Chiang Mai, which was a very short flight.
How long was that layover?
I want to say like 7 hours. And I don't know if you've experienced before, but there are times where like the check-in desk doesn't open until like, what, 3 or 4 hours before your flight?
That's a rough amount of time because it's not really long enough where you're like, oh, let's just go to an actual hotel and sleep in a real bed for, what, a 4-hour nap, a 3-hour nap? That's a rough amount of layover.
It was. And I landed in the morning and the flight left in the afternoon. I felt tired, but it was like daytime, you know. It was worth it for the points and the redemption.
That second leg from Hanoi over to Chiang Mai was just a cash ticket, right?
Correct. I believe AirAsia, like a 2-hour flight.
Why didn't you just book one that was like sooner or later to give you a better layover time? Was it just they have one per day?
May have been, or price could have been. You know, I have to consider pricing in my cash travels as well, of course.
That makes sense. Sometimes when we are like, well, this one's going to save me a couple $100s and expenses are kind of low, there's that trade-off with convenience, but oh, that is a rough 7 hours.
That was a rough one.
So then you're in Chiang Mai. Then what happens next?
So I was in Thailand for 2 months. I lived at, for most of the time, I lived at a co-living place, which is a place for remote workers and digital nomads to meet and have some community. At a place like this, you have your own space, but I was able to co-work with people during the day, have lunches and dinners with them. We were able to do stuff on the weekend. So it was a lot. It was nice meeting some other travelers, but I'm too old for the hostel thing. So it was like the hostel, but you still have your own space, which was super nice. That place was like $400 a month. So again, amazing value for a place to stay. And then, like I said, it's some community. But we can talk about some of my amazing hotel redemptions that I had while I was in this Asia trip. Thailand only allows you to stay for 30 days at a time with the US passport stamp. So your choices are to go to the passport or embassy and get your visa extended, or to leave the country and come back. I chose to leave Thailand at my 30-day mark, go away for a week and return. At that time, I went to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. There, I had a nice bank of Hilton points. So I stayed some Hilton hotels, but my big fancy redemption for my hotel stay one night was at the St. Regis Kuala Lumpur, where I used my American Express Platinum Fine Hotels and Resort credit. So that's a $200 credit you get off your room. And the nice thing about Southeast Asia is the St. Regis room was like $290 and made it like $90. And with that card, you have Marriott Gold status. I was able to get a room upgrade to a hotel room that I really never needed, but it was just amazing to spend one night there. That's all I was able to do.
When you want to stay in Thailand for more than 30 days, how long does that gap have to be? Can you just cross over into Malaysia and then same day come back? Or do you know the limits there?
I believe you can. Plenty of people that I talked to would take a bus, which was like a 4-hour bus ride up to Laos, and just cross the border for the day and return. So it is, I believe if you probably do it habitually, then they probably will catch on. But I talked to plenty of people that would just leave for a day or overnight and return. Also, it's if you want to go through the process, it apparently is pretty easy to extend your visa by going to the office and doing the paperwork as well.
So how long did that trip last in total?
That trip was just about 2 months. So I was in Chiang Mai for most of the time. I also did a group trip, which included Chiang Mai and Bangkok. And then I came home in October. But before returning home, I flew to Singapore because I had met up with some Points of Miles people previously in the year. And one of them had alerted me to a redemption from Singapore to New York on Singapore business class. So again, this is the power of networking with people and following people online, because I probably would have been looking for that redemption. I would have been looking, how to get home from Thailand to the US, but it was worth flying down to Singapore to fly Singapore business from Singapore to New York for 87,500 Air Canada miles. So that's one of the longest flights in the world, but amazing flight. I really want to do it again this year. I'm going to make it work. Anyway, so I flew Singapore to New York, and that flight was interesting because the business class cabin was not full. And I don't know if you've flown Singapore, but the seats fold down kind of funky. And so she flattened one of the seats for me as my bed and let me sit in another seat for my meals, which was super nice. But yeah, it was a great flight, even though I messed up the whole meal thing, because you can pre-order your meals from a huge menu. And I think one of the things I had ordered, they planned to give it to me, so she let me choose something else. But yeah, I have to say that even though it was a long flight, I feel like 4 hours across the US in economy feels longer than 19 hours in business class on Singapore.
I can attest that is true. Yes. Because that 5-hour trip or something from Los Angeles to Miami, and even in JetBlue premium economy, it feels so long. There's no lumbar support. But then I've done 16 hours or so from Los Angeles over to Doha, Qatar, and Q Suites. I'm like, this is great. Watched my movies, got a full night of sleep. But yeah, if you're ever flying Singapore Airlines, definitely do the book the cook option, because that's where they have like lobster thermidor and all sorts of different fun, fancy meals that you can have on a plane.
Yeah, so I came home from New York, and that was the end of my Asia flying for a year.
How's your points bank looking right now?
Great question. Horrible. I had 50,000 American Express points, but I redeemed them for a flight over to London in May, and I'll redeem some of those points for a flight back from Europe. So no, my points are pretty depleted, to be honest, except I do have a nice bank of Hilton points. But now this year might be a flight, a year of more economy flights. And let me add that I do have a flight to Turkey and Turkish business and then back into Asia. So yeah, I do have flights back to Asia in September in business class. But after that, no, my points are depleted. But I'm super excited for some redemptions I have this year.
What's your advice to people who are like, this is the exact situation I don't want to be in. I don't want to like experience business class and all of this cool stuff and then have no more points. And so for everybody who's like, this is why I don't want to earn and burn, and this is exactly why I'm hoarding points, what's the message that you have there?
I've never been one to be proud of having large banks of points. I think the right thing to do is earn and burn. I mean, for me personally, I just don't think it's necessary to have a million points in the bank. And I've always been one to earn and burn. But yes, do I know what's going to happen in 2025? No, I don't, because at this moment, I don't have a clear plan of earning points. But I think what I will do is say, okay, 2025 comes around. Here's a trip that I want to take. And then do that work backwards thing of, okay, here's the points I need. Let's go find the cards that will get me those points. And at that point, I should hopefully be back under the 524. Yeah, I think it's my method is find the trip and then work backwards. And if your points bank is depleted, then it's not a huge deal. There's always ways to earn points.
Yeah, I think it's also important to say, okay, so you don't want your entire bank to be depleted. Mm-hmm. As opposed to what? Because you've gotten to take at least two amazing trips over to Asia, plus all the intermittent travel that you were doing in between as well. And I have to ask if like people really think they'll be happier with staring at a screenshot of 2 million points instead of getting these two great trips to Asia. Because I mean, if you get those two trips and then afterwards you're like, eh, it might be like economy from here on out. Yeah, it's hard to go backwards, but I think it would be very difficult for somebody to be like, I actually wish I had not taken those trips. And I instead wish I had just held on to the points. For anybody who has already experienced that kind of travel, even if it means like that their points bank is depleted afterwards, that's what the points are for. You can always earn more.
I also will say that I told myself this a year ago, which was one of these days I need to fly to Asia in economy just to prove I could do it in case I am points depleted. But I seem to always find a way to make it work. But I am going to do Europe in economy this year because I think it's okay to fly economy sometime, even on points. I was always like, oh, I'm only going to use points for business class. But 10,000 points to London and 28,000 points coming back from Paris to the US, I think are great redemptions even in economy. So I'm happy to be doing those in May.
For everybody who's thinking like, how sustainable is digital nomad life if you're like Uber driving every once in a while, doing some VA work on the side every once in a while, like, is that sustainable? And we're going to caveat this to say you don't have children. So that's a whole different thing. But yeah, how sustainable is this?
For me, it's working out. Are things perfect? Not really. And may I have to go back to corporate America at some point or look for regular work? I believe I probably will. But for right now, it works. It's working out for me. But it's not my, I don't believe it can be my long-term plan, especially because I also have to really pay attention to the bank of money that I have and try not to let that run out, because it's so easy to see that money just fall and go, oh, when that money runs out, I'll go back to corporate America. But I'm trying to not really touch that money from the condo sale and just live in a way that I can have income and lower cost of living places and honestly live with my parents at the moment for a month. So that's how I'm doing it. But yeah, I don't believe it's a long-term plan.
Yeah, a lot of people also think, oh, once I leave corporate America, like I can never go back. I'm unemployable at that point. But there are people who take mini sabbaticals all the time. Mm-hmm. Like you can take a year or so, and then it's not like you've been doing that thing. You have work experience during that time as well. So these mini sabbaticals and these different phases of life, it's completely doable. There's entire communities of people out on the internet who do that. So I think there's a lot of people who are like, I can't do that for list of reasons. But it's pretty inspiring, actually, just to see how many people on the internet are like, oh, I'll just take a year off, then I'll come back. And having a good bank of finances and emergency funds and all that definitely helps with easing the anxiety of taking that step to take a year off from corporate or take a couple of years and then do something else before possibly going back.
One thing that has been difficult but is important to remember is that when I was in corporate America, I was always putting money away for retirement. Now I'm not doing that as much, but I do have to remember to put a little bit away for retirement, and also health insurance, things like that are things to consider as well. And personally, my corporate job got really bad and I was very burned out that I wanted to leave quickly. But the real thing that you probably should do is work corporate life and build something on the side, whether it's a business or another part-time job, or whatever, but have the plan to leave corporate America. I don't think I did it as well as I could have looking back, just because I wanted out quickly.
And that makes sense. I fell into this a little bit accidentally. I had intended fully to stay in corporate America. I just worked my way up the actuarial science chain, different insurance companies, but I just kind of ended up building GeoBreeze by accident on the side. And then one day when the job was like, eh.
I thought I was going to be the CEO of the company I was working for one of these days. That was my goal back in the beginning, like literally to become a CEO, but that's not where life ended. And COVID had a lot to do with it. We started working from home remote and I was like, oh, what else can I do remote? Or when my boss told me that the laptop could leave the country, because my first thought was, oh, I'll take this laptop, go work corporate America in Thailand or Europe. And when they said I couldn't do that, that's when I was like, okay, well, let's find something else. So I joined digital nomad communities and started networking with people. I have my points and miles people, and I have my like remote worker digital nomad people. And both groups have helped me travel the way I travel.
Awesome. So with everything that you've learned in the past couple of years with points and miles and digital nomad life, what would you say is your number one tip for listeners today who might want to do something similar?
When it comes to miles, don't just build a bank of points with no plan. Think about the trip first and then do the work backwards thing. And it's okay not to have a million points in the bank. It's okay to take some amazing trips, whatever that is for you. And when it comes to digital nomad life, really have a plan with what you want to do. There's so many things you can do when it comes to digital nomad. Start your own business, do some freelance work for other people, but just make sure something you're passionate about, because you can burn out very quickly if you don't enjoy what you're doing.
Good advice. And speaking of good advice, can you give a shout out to someone else on the internet that you would recommend listeners follow for even more content?
Sure. So the first like travel creator that I started following was Karen Nate, the YouTubers, very well known. They do a little bit with Points and Miles. Most of their YouTube is about destinations, but they started a Facebook group called The Daily Drop. And also I think you can subscribe to their newsletter. That is all Points and Miles. And Karen Nate were the first like travel creators that I went to an in-person event. And I also met some other Points and Miles folks down there as well, who we've since been able to meet up more than once. So yeah, those are the Karen Nate are the shout outs I would give when it comes to following for more Points and Miles.
Awesome. And where can we find you if anybody has any questions for your journey?
I am just Matt_Kartal, K-A-R-T-A-L on Instagram. Again, I'm not a fancy creator and you don't need to be a fancy creator. Just network with other Points and Miles people. And that's a big help in getting me the Amazing Redemptions, and I'm sure for the listeners as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks again, Matt, so much for coming onto the show. It was a pleasure having you today.
Awesome. Thanks, Julia.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!